Welcome to the Frontier Banter.
All right, hey, welcome everybody to the next episode. I think it's episode 7 of the Frontier Podcast. My name is Colonel Derek Baer, the U.S. Army Garrison Commander at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and I am here with...
Command Sergeant Major Bill Pearson, the Fort Sill Garrison CSM.
All right, today we have the opportunity to talk to a great group of folks, and it's our Department of Training, Mobilization and Support, DPTMS, I think if I get that all right. And if I flubberbub it, that's all right. I got folks here that will tell me how I flubberbubbed it. So, hey, we're going to start off with some intros. I'm going to start off with the lead here, with old Glenn Waters, Glenn with double N, not with one, double N, so let you know where he's from in the world. And then we'll go around, do some intros, and we'll get after it. Glenn, if you don't mind.
All right, so I'm Glenn, and I am the director of DPTMS.
All right.
And Mike Spears, the Chief of Training Division for DPTMS.
Yes, my name is William Benitez, and I'm the Chief of Plans, Operations, Mobilization, and Security.
And finally, I'm bringing up the rear. Name's Rob Turner. I'm the Chief of the Aviation Division within DPTMS.
Heck yeah. And so no one really understands the amount of work and scope that our planning, training, mobilization, support team does. I mean, most people just think, hey, we just do ranges, and that's kind of where we leave it at, right? Is that a true statement?
Yes, sir, definitely.
I think so.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I'm just going to ask this for the group writ large. Anybody can jump in, and I'm going to use one of my favorite quotes from Office Space. What is it that you do here?
All the bobs.
Yeah, exactly. I got five bosses, Bob.
Is that what's going on here?
That's exactly right. All right. So what is it you do here, Will?
Sir, so my division coordinates and plans and manages all orders, taskings for the garrison. We also support the installation on deployments. All external units coming in to train on Fort Sill, we coordinate the resources and life support activities for them, and we also manage the security for the personnel security for the installation. And in addition to that, we do the emergency management and force protection for the garrison.
That sounds like a lot. I mean, that's just one small entity of what DPTMS does, right? I mean, then you coordinate a lot, not just internally to the garrison, but it sounds like Department of Emergency Services, Fire Center of Excellence, all the 10 units in here, Lawton, Oklahoma, and other surrounding communities. Is that a true statement?
Absolutely. So one of the big things Will does with a team of 25 people, you know, by the TDA, is synchronizes.
And what does TDA mean?
Table of Distribution Allowances.
Yeah, that's right. Is that a question?
It's an answer, sure. So he synchronizes not only within the garrison, he synchronizes with the senior commander's staff.
Right.
And he synchronizes across all the directorates, and he synchronizes across the installation management command on all the things that those commands have. So we're here where the rubber meets the road. So all these headquarters have these ideas and directives we have to do. But Will puts a lot of those things in place, and his team has done a great job managing everybody's directives,
right,
or asks to make the post safer and more secure and more efficient.
Yeah, and you know, we've been in the Army collectively for a long time. Like, if y'all don't know, I think everybody here in this room is a veteran, either currently serving or just got. I mean, like again, Glenn, you were the garrison commander here about 10, 11 years ago. I think most of you either retired senior non-commissioned officers, right, or whatever. I mean, it's a big deal. And I don't know about you, but I remember coming in the Army as a young soldier, you know, young enlisted soldier, then a young officer after that. Is DPTMS, this nebulous organization, does all kinds of things, but didn't really know what it did. But then as a garrison commander, you're like, I liken it, it's different, same but different, right? As like the garrison's super G3, G5 shop, and the G33, which is all the training management, power projection, all that rolled up into one for the garrison, and then also the support tangentially to all the other tenant units and the Fire Center of Excellence. Is that a, kind of a true statement? Because I'm really trying to let folks know what you really do.
So I think one of the amazing things is, you know, all three of these division chiefs have very small organizations. And I always say they're fighting way above their weight class.
Right.
And that's a key thing to understand. But we don't have a deep staff. You know, Will has about 25 people, but that's any given day they're at school, they could be on TDY for something, or they could be taking care of personal things, and they could be on leave or away. So we have a very, because of their experience and knowledge, they use a very abbreviated planning cycle that the Army follows. We use it very abbreviated because we don't have the depth to do that.
Right.
But at the same time, because of their depth and knowledge and experience, all of them have seen 50 different ways to do whatever topic comes from the commanders.
Right.
Okay, which way do you want to go? But they understand that the resources, both money and people, drive the decisions. Yeah. But sometimes those above who haven't understood what the garrison does doesn't really see that or understand the complexity. Like, okay, we make a decision, it impacts DPW, which impacts one of our customers, either 434 or 428 or 75th, any one of those brigades or anybody else in the post, even the non-military units, it could impact NEC, it could impact the USO, it could impact Red Cross. So anything we do for you, sir, and for the senior commander, always has impacts. And we hear about it all the time when we don't do it right.
That's right. And then for anybody out there who wants to know what the NEC is, they're all the IT, the instrument, the information technologists, the information management folks, all the, we'll just call them the signal geeks, right? They're really great. They do all, they make sure that all our network is running on the installation and through them. And then, so DPW is our Department of Public Works. You know, and so we have a lot of different mission sets here on the Fire Center of Excellence, you know, on Fort Sill. We have a Training and Doctrine Command now, soon to be the Army Transformation and Training Command now, as we combine Army Futures Command and TRADOC together. So we have a training mission break. We also have a Forces Command mission with two brigades there as well. And then we have a hospital, and we have a bunch of other things that we do here. So we do training. What is that in training support? I'm looking at you, Mike, because you're kind of the guy for that, right? Like, you're the training support. You do all the ranges. You do all the things that we have to do to support the warfighter, whether it's turning civilians into soldiers or going to a power projection mode. So what does that mean for you?
So honestly, sir, for any training that happens on the installation, so you have live training, which occurs out on the ranges and the training areas. You have virtual training, which occurs in the engagement skills trainer, for example, or simulations as well.
Yeah.
So between the mission training complex, which runs the warfighter exercises, command post exercises, to get the Forcecom units ready to go to deploy by practicing their mission command capabilities and skills, then the Regional Training Support Center running the engagement skills trainers, they handle all the simulations and the training aids devices and helping those soldiers as they build their foundational skills or refine some of their skills that are rusty. Then, of course, range operations runs the live ranges and training areas. So all those, it affects every single thing. So not just Forcecom, not just TRADOC, but all Forcecom and TRADOC, non-government organizations as well as the National Guard. So there's a huge demand. I would say every day, on average, we have 2,700 plus soldiers out in the field training somewhere across the range and training complex.
That's right.
So one of the things Mike does and his team, the Mission Training Complex, the MTC, they only do the large-scale digital exercises. They also run weekly classes for individual soldiers so they can hone their skills. So the MTC really focuses on the Forcecom units. And like you said, so we're a mixed organization here on Fort Sill with Forcecom and TRADOC units.
Yeah.
But the individual classes that Mike's teams run over there are for any soldiers to hone their skills. So if you're a TRADOC soldier and you want to take AFATADS again or one of the command and control platforms we're using, you can go there for a week and get on the class. It's first come, first serve. And we announce it regularly throughout the thing. But I think Mike should talk a little bit more about the throughput of the compos, if you wouldn't mind doing that. Like, how many people you see weekly, monthly, annually, if you can throw some of those numbers out there on the ranges and the training areas.
Yes, sir. I mean, on average, we easily train over 80,000 soldiers. So that's from basic training to doing advanced training with...
What's that window? those 80 salvage soldiers?
About a year, sir.
So that's a year.
So roughly a year. But they will use, so we got any and all sorts of weapon systems being employed here at Fort Sill, including some of the newer technologies. So the newer technologies will include laser weapon systems, which 460th ADA Battalion is using as part of their maneuver short-range air defense.
Yeah, and we're doing Army transformation. You know, and I'm going to tie Rob into this here. I mean, this is for everybody, and Sergeant Major as well. Like, we are transforming as an Army. And I, you know, huge fan of the digital. Sergeant Major and I are athletic gamer nerds, right? And we love the gamer nerd aspect of this, right? Like, getting soldiers behind, you know, an Xbox controller with a drone. You know, you got the high energy lasers. You've got the classroom of the future, ideally with oculars and training. Like, to me, like, get rid of the fire. Like, hey, this is Derek Baird, not maybe the Army, but Derek Baird is saying, get rid of the fire support trainer. Do it with oculars. Probably cheaper, better. You could do it in a classroom. You could do it in your garage. Let's say take it home, do it in a garage. But you could do this, and you can master that with using less resources, but do it over and over again much faster and be more efficient with it. And I think that's where transformation comes in handy. And I'm looking for the group here, as we look at training and support, what does that look like as we look to the future in an Army and transformation? And Rob, I'm looking at you because you're the airfield guru, and we're doing drones, we're doing FAA policy, and Colonel Barrett's beating me up on FAA policy and drones, and, you know, so what are your thoughts?
I think sometimes... Now, not every DPTMS across the Army has airfield as part of its organization, and not every garrison has an airfield as well. So we are in a bit of a unique situation here in that we do have the airspace as an asset that we're able to utilize in training today's soldiers, field artillery, air defense, and it even goes beyond those two organizations. We're really... I think Fort Sill, in terms of boundaries, goes beyond because we also support the Air Force and the Marines and the Navy on occasion. Our biggest Air Force that we support is located out of Shepherd Air Force Base. But we have what's called delegated airspace that has been signed over to us by the FAA in a manner of speaking that enables us to take this airspace that we have and manage it ourselves.
Yeah.
We're not managed by the FAA, but we do fall under their umbrella, but we have Army civilian personnel that manage the airspace that enables the type of training that we need to do here on Fort Sill that includes the field artillery, the air defense, artillery aspect, and as well as the emerging drones that now we're really starting to see and are becoming a very large topic of discussion the spectrum.
Yeah. That's a super key point, and you can expand on it. But what Rob was talking about is, like you said, sir, the whole world is moving towards the drones. It's an important asset, either commercially or militarily, and Rob's team manages that, which is a real-world thing. If you go somewhere, there's still commercial aircraft out there doing their job.
That's right.
And they have responsibilities that most times is going to trump us.
Well, I don't think people realize how important DPTMS is to Fort Sill as a whole, and how you guys all tie into each other. So, you know, Mike Spears is running all the ranges. Those ranges don't happen unless Rob Screw is out there controlling the airspace.
And that would be correct. And so there is that very tight connection between a part of Mike's team as well as ours with the coordination, the type of weapon systems that are going to be engaged, and the type of airspace that is needing to be utilized. So there, a lot of people really don't see it. This is one of those missions where somebody rolls out to the range, but they don't understand all the background that's gone in to actually allow them to go to the range in that capacity.
We
could have dozens of aircraft at any point in time in the day circling, dropping ordnance, all working at the same time while 75th, 434, 31st are out at the range doing whatever. So it's really a ballet in a manner of speaking that goes on.
Are you saying a joint fight happens here often?
Every
in a combined arms every, maneuver,
every,
a joint
that's,
fight?
It literally
has to figure a new name out.
It's, yeah,
it's more than just military.
It's supporting the
multi-domain
operations.
We are tired of civilians.
Yeah.
And all need a new name, sir. We're beyond joint. Because of all the commercial aircraft he's managing, we got to figure
it out. It's all about multi-domain ops, right? And we're doing that.
That is multi-domain.
But it does go on every single day, it almost in a 24/7 type of environment.
And the cool thing is, and I'll turn back over to Sergeant Major. I hate to interrupt there again, but Lawton supports us quite a bit when, if a radar goes down and vice versa. There's a mutually supporting entity there. I think it's not always the best, but it does work. Yeah.
Well, the radar is actually owned and managed by us.
Yeah.
This might be. We call it, it's an airport surveillance radar 8, and it is quite a very old system.
Dependable.
But it is, and actually it is dependable.
Like Glenn Waters.
but that's another aspect of the team, is the radar technicians that work on this thing that's older than each one of us in here, believe it or not.
Yeah.
In some cases, we're going back to 1950s technology, but recent upgrades and sustainment packages and things of that nature, it has become actually a very reliable system and probably one of the more reliable in the Army or the Defense Department environment. But these guys are they're hard workers keeping this thing up and going, because it is an extremely key piece of hardware here for Fort Sill that, again, enables all this multi-domain type of activity to go on. Because if it goes down, we have to make significant shifts in how we manage the training.
Mm-hmm.
And the intent is to never turn it over to the FAA, because there are different requirements involved.
It's always better when you can control your own airspace.
But
right?
Yeah, another one of those really significant behind-the-scenes things that goes on that makes sure that whoever's at Fort Sill or coming to Fort Sill can do what they need to do.
Absolutely.
I guess the next question would really be for Glenn is, with between the airfields, the ranges, the ceremonies, the mobilizations, how do you as a director keep all that synchronized and moving forward?
So it's easy when you have three amazing division chiefs and they have some quality people. So like I said earlier, I think every day they're fighting above their weight class,
mm-hmm.
making things happen, adjusting to shifts and priorities, adjusting to resources on the fly, and keeping people safe.
And
making it look simple, you know?
You know, and I explain that all the time, because I didn't know what DPDMS was until I became a garrison CSIN, to be honest with you. When I was a battalion CSIN, stuff just happened when I went to ranges. And it was like, oh, okay.
NCOIC and OIC did the onion scans. They got on digits. They made the things. You did the thing. And then you went out there and you shot and you came back. And like, life is good.
So when I explain to people a division that did all these things for them, I'm like, well, in your head, you're envisioning 30 people. I'm like, that was Will Benitez and four dudes.
Yeah.
That's Rob and two guys over there controlling 300 aircraft a day. Like, you guys don't understand the scale of what they're doing for you, for Fort Sill, with bare bones amount of people.
Yeah. Because 25 it seems like a lot, but the things you listed, it's not a lot of people on day to day, right?
He didn't list them all either.
No, he just listed the main stuff, right?
So I agree with Sergeant Major. So when I retired as a Sergeant Major also, and had no clue what civilians did. As a matter of fact, my first job, I was fired because I treated a civilian badly.
Why are you looking at Rob when you say that?
My first job as a Sergeant Major, once I graduated from Sergeant Major's Academy, I was attached to operations at DPTMS, and I treated a civilian badly, and I was immediately fired from that job and moved to 75th Fire Brigade.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I think that is also, Will brings up a good topic, sir, is that I experienced the same thing.
Yeah.
I left uniform and I became an Army civilian. Seriously, I really had no idea just how much the civilians actually do on an installation to make sure that what we do, you're right, it is not well understood.
Yeah.
And, but I think another overlooked thing is just how much experience is on the installation from prior soldiers or other elements within the Department of Defense that are here supporting what's going on.
Yeah.
So one of the things I want to talk about, Rob kind of mentioned there, sir, is, and Mike, please jump in. So it is a complicated transition to leave the service, especially the longer you're in, you get into that military mindset. You don't understand. But at Fort Sill, we have a mix. A lot of our civilian employees are prior military from different branches of service.
That's right.
But we also have pure civilians. And then sometimes making that jump is a little bit complicated initially, unless you really have someone to groom you and help you along and see that. But one of the things that we do, I'm going to ask Mike to explain it, is under Colonel Baird's responsibilities, is transition of military service members out of the Army.
Yeah.
And he has a program in place where they go to the TAP program, Transition Assistance Program, for our military leaving. And then if they want, they can trail federal employees to see how that world is. And I'll let Mike talk a little more about that and what he's done to help a number of soldiers to either see, oh, this is for me or it's not for me. And the best thing about it, Mike, please kind of talk about what your retirees, how they help them. It's like a double whammy. They get like the best of both worlds.
Yes, sir. So we have the job skills program is what most of the soldiers who are either ETSing, getting out of the Army, or retiring even, they want to participate in. So they apply through the process, and Mr. Waters and I interview them. We talk to them, and then we bring them into the training division. So primarily, a lot of the guys, we've had about 15 over the 2 years that I've been working in DPTMS, and
we all want to be range inspectors. Until Mike explains what that means, well, I don't want to do all that work.
Until they have to go do it. So that's what we do. So we literally team them up. So depending on their dreams, desires, everything else, we look at within range, for example.
Yeah.
So we got the range operation side. So we expose them to being a range inspector.
Right.
So going out to the ranges, checking, watching the units, making sure they've got everything on their checklist, making sure they've got combat lifesavers, they've got a risk assessment, and doing all that. Doing it in the middle of the summer when you've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 trainees going down like that due to heat casualties.
Oh, yeah.
They're still in uniform technically, but they're wearing civilian clothes because they're in the job skills program.
Yeah.
They're having a look at their own soldiers saying, oh, shit, we got to do a better job. We're not taking care of our soldiers.
Yeah.
And then put them on the fire desk. So then they got to listen to somebody out on the range who has no idea how to use a radio. Or we take them to the other side of range ops and put them with support. So then they're support having to figure out how to use potentially a skid steer or work and develop and fix and repair a range and get it ready to go, or build target frames because they don't just magically appear out there on the zero range. Somebody has to physically make the frames. No, sir. And we got one.
Sergeant Major said they did.
So it's been incredibly good, actually. Yeah. Like I said, we've had about 15 in the last 2 years, and we've actually hired two of them.
Yeah,
and they've come back.
You know, it's interesting too. Now is as we say this, I think just about every podcast, we're always going through some sort of transition, whether it's military to civilian life, whether it's forward patch lines, rear patch lines, whether it's transforming for the future, transformation of contact, all these other things that we're doing. It's all about transition. We're always in a transitional period, and so now we're looking at how do we support as we transition through some of these reductions in force and all these other things. And I think one of the greatest things that y'all are doing is, as an organization writ large, we're supporting each other. So we've got brigades that are bringing in some soldiers to help us out on the ranges who are learning a ton.
Yes.
And so they're not, kind of sitting there doing, like, they're getting a broad scope development, like on the job training, a developmental phase where they can see what goes, because again, it's not like Captain Baird, Major Baird, like, I don't know how this works, just go out there and shoot and hear it happens, right? I mean, he kind of did, but I mean,
right.
And that's two pronged. Well, one, they realize how much experience is in our civilians here,
mm-hmm.
And also it knocks that ego out of you when you start to realize. Like, I used to just be that young E7 that was just mad at the guy that came and spent rain. But now you take someone like George Ponder, now they're learning, I'm talking to a Ranger Regiment Hall of Fame inductee.
Right.
Who, maybe I should just shut up.
Who was in the the first or second Ranger? I think it was, they got second place in the first Ranger competition ever, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Yeah, that, I mean, so if you George Ponder, don't mess with him. Don't mess with him.
Like, well, young sergeant. That's what I mean. He's a well,
he's
young sergeant.
He's a name that's been around quite a while.
So. Yeah. So
it's time to, maybe you should just shut up and listen to that guy.
That's right.
Get down and like, oh, okay.
Oh, he's a Hall of Fame Ranger guy. I mean, like those are folks. And
yes, sir.
You know what I love about George too, and George, if you're out there listening, hopefully you are, is that we talk about we're all old fuddy duddies, but the ones I think all of us that are successful, we do transition. It's transitioning for the future. George is one of them.
Yes, sir.
Like we look at like putting in new technology. He's in the forefront. Dude's older than we are, but he's out there explaining how you do this, what this looks like, talking about oculars and this and new stuff. I'm like, bro, you're around when the abacus was around, bro. Like, you know, right, yeah. Right. But then you move forward. He's all about digital technology. Like, he can see the future. And I appreciate that. I think that, again, as we look at transformation for Garrison, like, that's one of the things that, so I, you know, for the group, for the our audience, one of the things that we did is we came in here, it's like, how do we become the installation of the future? We talk quality of life. We talk installation readiness, infrastructure, and energy resilience and independence, and all these four things we're really trying to look at to get after how do we support the senior commander and Army transformation initiatives. But how do we look for the future? That's part of that is what we do here now, is what do we look like now? Something for the group, what we do now, if you were, you know, the head, the HMFIC, the head mofo in charge, you know, what would you want to transform to get us to the future like today? You know, that's a tough question to answer, but I think we have all talked about it, so I'm interested, right? And then we'll get to Will's Corvette after this, because I really want to talk about this bad boy.
So for transformation, we really got to look at right now, I think, is how we execute individual tasks, the soldiers, how they execute their individual tasks, how do we make it better for them, more hands-on, keep it hands-on, however, implement some technology into the individual tasks. There's some basic tasks that we still have to do. Yeah. Obviously, you know, weapons qualification, NBC, go out there and do
suck down that gas.
Suck in the gas. But there's some maybe technologies, Power BI and things that we can start implementing in training these young guys early in their career, implementing in their individual taskings, and then figure out, you know, again, look really hard at what we're doing as collective tasks in the mission, both in field artillery world, and as these systems change, right, how we implement also this new technology in that. We do a great job, at least in the operations side. Our guys, you know, we have the force modernization piece of this. We support that. So we issue and field new equipment to the units. We also
and that's everything from a small toolbox to striker vehicles.
I mean, because we were talking. I mean, I think we were talking with Sprague Tovo, our logistics readiness center director. You know, as we look at like you're saying, like, hey, how do we, like for maintenance, for instance, right? Because maintenance is, we can all pull a trigger, we can all like pull land or these things, but maintenance is where it's at to get us to where we need to be, right? We all talk about, you know shooting and whatnot, you know, operations, you know, tactics and whatnot for amateurs.
Yes, sir.
Sustainments for, you know, professionals. So he was like, hey, would it be great to get an ocular in your office, and you're working on an engine, and you're doing things, and you're always, you know, you're doing PMCS, but you can do this without breaking and opening an engine, without maybe tearing something apart by accident, right? I mean, so Major, you talk about this often with like doctors, right? Like they use training.
Yeah, the doctors now are just doing the surgery 1,000 times before they go in and actually perform the surgery. And they found it's taken on average 2 hours less to do certain surgeries.
And there's less impact, right? There's more positive experience comes out of this. So having that classroom of the future, that virtual AR, VR, augmented reality, virtual reality piece of equipment or kit, or just doing that,
yes, sir,
is super beneficial, right? So now you're not popping an engine and accidentally breaking something.
And sir, actually, the Regional Training Support Center does have a simulation for mechanics.
Right.
That they're actually fielding right now. They can issue out.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about, a lot of it is simulation and virtual. So we have the synthetic training environment that is being developed. So that is, a lot of what we're talking about is the next step.
Right.
That we're looking at taking the engagement skills trainers, the reconfigurable vehicles, so you've got different vehicles, you can put crews on it, and you can modify it based on the type of organization you are.
Yeah.
So that is the where the Army's going.
And I'll tell you, you know, like recently we walked around the 31st Air Defense Artillery as they're training, they're doing their train up before they deployed. And you go back in their little area there, I think they are on the cutting edge in some of these things. Because, I love artillery, obviously. Like, we're artillerymen. I think most of us in this room are, at least, have been around the community for a while.
We got one blue cord in the room.
We do have one blue cord.
You got a tanker
door. Well, you know, somebody has to.
All about the door kicking.
That's it. But, talking about it, doing simulation training for howitzers a little different, right? And,
yes,
and we haven't mastered that yet. We think we have, but we haven't, right? Not yet. We're getting there. The air defense, I think, has gotten there. Like, you look at, see the screens they did, and they're over and over and over and over. My goodness. Like, and by the time you get out to your vehicle, now all you're doing is drive. Not all you're doing. There's a lot of things. You still got to do PMS. But when you're in ops and you're doing these things, it is muscle memory because it's the same exact buttonology. So the environment's a little different, right? The conditions are a little different,
yes, sir.
But the execution's not.
So,
because now you're on the same buttonology, and you've been doing it thousands and thousands of times.
As a former tanker, that's what we did.
That's exactly right.
You
did
the contact or fire trainer. You did that repeatedly.
That's right.
As you built up before you even got to the range,
yeah,
to pull the trigger.
You know, the fun thing is now you can do that. It's interesting. Like, this big box, and get in there and do these things. Now you can sit in like four chairs and just do it. You do it in your office. The cost and the... So again, you look at transformation. And these are the ways I think we're going.
I think the Army's usually... Well, not the Army. The military is usually pretty good at that. Mm. So you think about the engagement skills trainer. I mean, that's been around for a while now.
It sure has.
And that has saved us millions of man hours and millions of dollars in ammunition to be able to operate in that center. And especially with today's generation, you know, there are less and less hunters and outdoorsmen, sportsmen, hunting type people. It really, I think, also increases the confidence in our soldiers, the muscle memory you're talking about, and then allows them to be a little more safer on the range. So if you have someone who's inexperienced, that hopefully we prevent that problem from even getting out there. But we didn't talk about the 30th ADA, the schoolhouse here for the Air Defense Artillery Unit. They have, like you said, sir, some amazing digital goggles, and they'll do that as a classroom experience. But this is funny, you know, if you're the one who's not pulling your weight, well, guess what? You stay after class, and you can keep the goggles on and, you know, operate with avatars as opposed to your actually other soldiers.
That's right.
So those soldiers who passed that skill go on to the next one, but the soldier who didn't, he stays there with the avatar group and keeps working on it until he masters it.
And that's because, you know, people learn differently, or they learn at different rates.
Yep.
And having that ability to do that, or check out a goggle to bring to you, it gives you the opportunity to train.
And you're saving millions of dollars.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. There's companies out there now that are doing VR, JTAC training. The amount of money you're saving in fuel for an F-15 or 16, the cost of whatever what bombs you're dropping, the cost of the concrete bombs, the cost of you're paying the airspace guy, you're paying... Just the millions of dollars over
just the weather delays too. That causes
the classes of supply alone. Food and water, you know. So it's really interesting, and then we're looking, like Rob, you brought this up. We're looking at drones, you know, unmanned aerial systems. I just think drones is so much easier to say. But if you look at drones, there's different ways, like you know, working with a couple folks that were like, how do we do FAA policy? What does that look like? How do we do this? How do you do training? Like, I recently saw, I thought this was really great, and I think I shared this picture with you. It almost like a giant padding cage. It's like a big mesh area, or a big meshed up area, like a big frame with mesh, like a big netting all around it, and you just like fly stuff in there, and you really just practice flying. Then you take that out into the range, and now you're looking at whether it's counter drones or counter small UAS as we're doing here, you know, or you're using drones as a forward observer, or you're doing it as a scouting mission. I mean, like, we have a really great opportunity here, I think, at Fort Sill with the Fire Center of Excellence and all the different training aspect and ForceCom to really put all that together and say, hey, we can actually do this.
Yeah, there's, how can I, so with the emergence of the drones and they're becoming more and more prevalent in what we do, I think in some respects, sure, it has forced us to look at older ways, for example, how to react to a drone.
Oh, yeah.
So the drones are up ahead. And if you have soldiers and things moving through, so now a lot of new soldiers have to, I think, practice a little more, relearn camouflage techniques.
Yeah.
Because of the aerial observation aspect that a drone brings. Some drones are used for, say, like the ADA guys to practice targetry against a moving aircraft, per se. Some drones are, will, as we're already starting to see, carry and deliver ordnance against an enemy. So how do we react to that? How do we teach soldiers to do all that? They're not just observation platforms anymore. They're actually becoming, I think, a multi-domain weapon system.
Yeah, definitely. So offensive, will, defensive, and even logistically.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, at your point, like 434, are one of the basic combat training brigade. They're doing react to contact. It's right. And it's like not your normal. I mean, outside your normal react to contact, now the new normal is react to the thing that's flying at you.
So in some cases, you're having this new technology really begin to just come out in wide and varied different ways.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're also having to, relearn might not be the right term to use, but relearn some older soldiers type skills to be effective against this new emerging technology.
It's forcing us, I think, relearn might be the right term, to be honest with you, but it's forcing us to not be complacent anymore.
Correct.
We spend 20 years, hey, we go somewhere, we own the air in 24 hours, and it's ours.
Right.
Let's face it. Now, that's very subjective what owning the air means.
Correct.
Like, we might own 16,000 feet, but we don't own 200 feet. Because now a swarm of drones can come over you.
That's right.
And ruin your day as the Ukrainians are fighting.
They can.
Yeah, it's like the old reactive helicopter, right? You know, it's like, you know, so we're taking that and kind of modifying it. So, you know, what's old is new, right? You know, it's what's old is new again. So how do you react to that, but differently?
Yeah. So your line of sight is no longer necessarily straightforward to your left, to your right, or to your rear. It's all of that now, plus you're having to look up a lot more.
Yeah. So there's one thing, sir.
Yeah.
I understand how drones are suddenly emerging, but they're not. We have done experiments at Fort Sill for 10 years on using drones as forward observers.
Yeah.
So we have done that. We have proven it. We have done call for fire missions using a digital thread straight to AFATADs and prosecuting it. We can do this. The Fires Battle Lab has tons of data on sensor-to-shooter exercises.
Yeah.
I've used a forward observer at White Sands, call for fire to me here at Fort Sill digitally without any
voice or eyes and stuff, right?
Yes, correct. You know, it was using a putt that was this big.
Yeah, like a little
smaller than.
If you haven't seen it, it's like a little, thumb to forefinger.
Yes, sir.
You know, and you know, like a little deck of cards almost size. But you know, look at, so how does all this impact what we do in DBTMS, right? So again, we're transforming as an organization, whether it's, you know, organizationally, structurally, whether it's resource, new equipment, you know, and again, like some of it may not be new, but the techniques constantly change. So that's what, I'm with you. Like drones have been around for a long time. But now, it's more ubiquitous at the tactical level and like the personal soldier level.
Yep.
And now, that's a thing, right? And so now, how do you combat that? How do you exercise that? How do you train that? How do you support it? You know, and so those are the things that we, I think, collectively are looking at, whether it's Rob and his airfield crew. How do we do that? At what level do we do it? You know, because let's face it, if I'm a forward observer or I'm a scout or I'm, you know, Private Pearson, you know, or Corporal Waters, you know, or Lieutenant Spears as a fire support team, I want to see what's over that hill. All right, let's pull my backpack drone and throw it. Let's go. I don't want to wait to call that in.
Sure.
And you shouldn't, quite frankly.
Yes.
So how do you train that here? Because
sure.
I want to see what's over the other side. Like, Why not?
And so we've talked about that. So from my perspective of training, what I have to do and we have to do is remain extremely proactive. Mm-hmm. And we have to forecast out. So, for example, the 460th, they say, okay, we're going to put a laser weapon system on 460th and field it and shoot it. Well, why couldn't they do that? They can do that because of the work we did 15 years ago.
There's always one.
So I guess I owe everybody lunch.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah. Hey, everybody heard that.
So the bottom line is we set conditions in 2015 for the work that we're doing now.
Yeah.
So it's a mindset of always looking forward and starting to identify, okay, we got long-range hypersonic weapons or mid-range capability.
Right.
What do I have to do? What can I do from a training perspective?
Absolutely.
I can't shoot a lot of that stuff.
So it's kind of funny because what Mike just talked about, setting the conditions, all three of these guys, sir, they operate tactically every day, but they're constantly touching operational and strategic.
That's right.
Because of your responsibilities as our majors, they're planning out what the next generation of equipment is going to look like.
Yeah.
So we're involved in that. But again, the meat of our day, we're the executors on Fort Sill.
Yeah.
But the three of them have to constantly be staying in the operation and the strategic fight, working with DPW, environmental, to shape the situation so that we can do the stuff Mike described out there on Thompson Hill for lasers.
You know, you hit something interesting. You know, we talk a lot of training. You know, we have not even scratched the surface on what it means environmentally, DPW-wise, monetarily, and all these other things. And so we're just really scratching the surface here. We could probably spend 4 hours if we wanted to talk about all the nuance that goes into what we do to... But we're
Rob
not.
Could.
Yeah, Rob. It sounds like Rob could absolutely do that.
We could actually, just like Mike. airspace is the same way. So, what's going on here at Fort Sill may not necessarily be going on at another installation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if we go back to one of these old school techniques, the ever present after action report, how are we taking what we're doing here, getting that information to the field, but also at the same time, receiving what emerging requirements may be, how can we begin to tweak, change POIs, so on and so forth, and project what Mike may need at the range level, what we may need at the airspace level, and then how do we work that with other competing Department of Defense activities, as well as all the civilian requirements that fall into place. I think as commanders going forward, as well as NCOs, are going to have to learn how to balance all that, as well as really, maybe the exchange of information is much improved, maybe different from what some of us experienced previously. But I think that's also going to be a very significant part of Army doctrine, training, going forward. Is
so it sounds like Rob wants to sign up to do something for the Harding Project for a combined arm for the Center of Army Lessons Learned. That's what I heard. I don't know if anybody else heard that, but that's what it sounded like. Anybody else hear that? So what do you think? Also, maybe lunch, it sounds like. It's on record. We heard it.
As long as I get an RC, I'm happy. And I'm not a moon pie guy. I just
RC, Cola, ChatGPT.
But they have zero sugar RC now, which is even better as I get older.
That's what I see in this can here, which is an old school can, too.
Not necessarily. I'm not beholden to the weigh-in anymore. However, that's another one of those things as you get older. That
if you don't know, Rob came in drinking RC Cola. For those out there who don't know what that is, go look it up. It's a pretty good drink. It's not as cool as Will Benitez's Corvette, though. So for the outstations here, I threatened I was going to say it. We were going to do it. It's got this baller red, cherry apple red. You almost got to wear sunglasses to look at it. And then he has like these really great watches. Well, let's talk about it. We talk about transition and transformation.
Yes,
you're transformed into like super bougie Corvette guy.
Yes, sir. So
I don't think we could fit in.
I think Will can fit in it for sure.
No, so it was an impulse buy, honestly. I was one night looking through on my phone, we laying in bed, and I saw this nice Corvette on there.
My impulse buys are a hoodie on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. Will's like, you know, Corvette. No, what he said is, I have this really great watch. If you don't know, Will Benitez has the best watches. I got this watch with like some red tint to it. I need a car that matches that. Oh my gosh, the Corvette pops up. That's right.
Hey, sir,
I say that because I'm super jealous, to be honest. Like, I love your car, man.
It's great. First day he brought it to work, it was looking all nice and shiny. He was inside and I was outside and kind of slid over there. There just happened to be some blank for sale signs floating around the parking lot. Grabbed one of those. I put $500 on it.
Oh, that's
taped
great.
It to his windshield and took a picture and sent it to him.
$500 OBO or best
exactly.
offer. I'll trade my van for that.
I still owe you for that one. You sure did.
That's brilliant. Oh, that's great.
But like I said, sir, yeah, it was an impulse buy. So
no, that's hilarious. Oh my
gosh.
We all
do one in life.
Yeah.
We all do. You got to. I'd like to, when I retire, get a Corvette. I ain't gonna lie to you. It's gonna be great. Hey, look, team, I really appreciate it. Appreciate your time. As we move forward for what we want to do with our training, our support, power projection, you know, I'd love to bring y'all back and talk more about power projection because, you know, we're going to be doing this for quite some time. And I think that is one of the biggest things that we, as we look at, like, what do we just scratch the surface, like you said, Mike, on what we actually do as a, you know, I think my brother brought a strategic support area. That's what we do. When people are forward deployed, that's what we do. How do we train folks to do, from civilians to soldiers? And then also, we power project out of here. You know, I'd be really interested to see, this might be a really good topic next time, is we're training civilians to soldiers in wartime. That's what we do, right? Or that's our business right now, even now. And then how do you power project them out somewhere in the same token? That would be fascinating to talk about as we move forward in this transformation in contact. What does that really look like when we're in a disrupted environment and all these things are happening? How do we do that here? Like, so that'd be really fascinating. So I think it's gonna be our next one when we talk about here in the next few months with you guys. Bring it back and bring your rail folks in, bring your power projection folks in, physical security folks in. Like, let's tie that together to power projection.
I'm gonna put everybody on the spot before we hang it up. Since I got four retired officers, a senior non-commissioned officer here, go from Rob, move on to the right. What's one bit of advice you would give to a soldier leaving AIT, going to their first duty station?
Or you know, or BOLIC, you know, Basic Officer Leader Course.
I've had a couple NCOs in my life that left a really profound impact on how I went forward in my career. Maybe it was probably my dad that told me, it's like, when you get to this point, find that individual that is quiet, always observing, but appears to be well in control of what's going on, and link up with that individual and just see what they're doing, how they're doing it. And I think that paid big dividends for me. I didn't just gravitate towards anybody, but I looked for those NCOs that I knew could really teach me what I needed to know as a junior soldier coming into the Army. What were the things that they did early on in their career, learned from their examples? Same thing, because obviously they'd been in the Army a while, and what were some of those old school techniques and things that they could mash together with a lot of the new things that were coming forward in my time, and how could I benefit from that? But basics were a big thing, and that was the thing that they always pushed. Basics all the time.
I love it.
Well, sir, so I saw Major. What I would say is, number one is physical fitness. When a soldier coming out of a basic AIT and going into the unit, number one for me is physical fitness. Stay fit, all right? Maintain your physical fitness at a high standard at all times. It don't mean that you have to be the highest one, but strive to be there at all times. Number two is learn your job, whatever job it is. Yep. AIT is great. But when you get to your unit, you really have to master your job, whether, you know, every aspect of, if you're an artilleryman, in my case was, you know, what level one, level two artillery, skills you
skill
need.
Skill level 10, skill
you,
level
you need, 20. You need to master those skill levels. Learn your TMs, your FMs. Now there's not FMs no more, but learn them. And get in and master those. And number three, although you are not a position to lead because you're a young soldier, but demonstrate that you're a leader. You go out there and be respectful, treat people with respect, and lead your team. And you'll have a great career within the Army, I think.
That's awesome.
Mike, you want to go next?
Sure, sir. So I would say, sir, Sergeant Major, as a brand new first lieutenant or second lieutenant when I reported to my unit at Benning, the biggest thing I thought of and did was stop, look around, talk to my NCOs and learn from my NCOs. I had a platoon full of desert storm vets.
Mm-hmm.
So as a tanker surrounded by a bunch of desert storm vets, they're crusty, ticked off, got back from Germany. Third ID was restationed from Germany to the States. So had a ton of experience. So I sat back, I watched, I learned, I absorbed from them. Had a absolutely phenomenal platoon sergeant, incredible. Helped me establish my foundation, understand my limitations, but also my capabilities. One of the key things I learned at my first NTC rotation was from the OC, said there's not just one brain in this platoon. There's 16 for a tank platoon, so every single one of you all contribute. So that was a key lesson that I've carried through with me, is I'm not going to have all the answers. So I am always open to ideas, thoughts, and everything else. If I am the leader, then ultimately the decision will come to me, but I will consider opinions, thoughts, ideas. I need that because I am not omniscient. So it's, and also keep things in perspective.
I love it.
Bottom line is if I totally flopped a interview at Amazon as I was getting ready to get out of the Army, because they're like, would you be willing to do, you know, get on the road or send somebody out on the road at night for this package and everything else? I'm like, I don't know. Is somebody shooting at us? Is there like rockets coming?
I'm like, I'm sure, such an emergency for this?
I'm not feeling it. So, no, I didn't get that job.
Oh my gosh. What about you, Glenn?
Okay, so I would kind of stuck to a mentoring technique. There are five areas I usually talk about for young soldiers, both either enlisted or officers. You have to constantly try to improve yourself physically, professionally as a soldier or whatever branch of service you go into, mentally, socially, and spiritually if you're a believer in God. And like Mike just said and Rob talked about, you should find a mentor in those categories if you're weak in one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be the smartest one in the category, but know who's around you on your team, who is the smartest. But keep pushing yourself to get better in those five categories and drag your subordinates along with you and even your peers.
Okay.
I'll give the easy two things, since we're almost out of time, that I always tell everybody. It's one, never try to be better than anybody else. Just try to be better than yesterday. If you concentrate on yourself and improving yourself, you'll naturally rise to the top. And two, seek out mentorship. Don't wait for mentorship to come to you.
That's right.
I constantly find people, well, nobody's come to mentor me.
Yeah,
you got to seek that mentorship out. And kind of like what Rob was talking about earlier, find that person, that guy or that girl that you see is just crushing it and has their life in order, and go to that person and seek the mentorship. Don't just sit around and wait for it to come to you.
Yeah, sometimes, and I'll add on to that a little bit, and I'll put mine on it.
Would you say you're going to piggyback?
I might, yes.
You better behoove.
Better behoove, caveat, belabor, all the Sergeant Majorly words. You know, it's interesting, like, oftentimes you want to find a mentor that's like you, like us, like you. Like, don't. Like, you can, But I would also offer up, if you want to find another mentor that's not like you, someone who thinks differently, because then you see a different perspective. If you're always in an echo chamber of mentorship, then sometimes you won't get that professional development. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and so I just offer up for mentorship.
Don't be so prideful that you're not open to experience.
Right. It's like going to the gym. Check your pride at the door. There's always someone faster or stronger in the gym. Mm-hmm. So, you know. So here's what I would tell you. Along the way, if you're going to, my parents always used to tell us this, if someone makes you a ditch digger, be the best darn ditch digger you can be. If someone's going to recognize that and move you forward. Right, we talk about soldiers coming out of AIT, BOLIC, like you name it, you know, basic officer leader course or advanced individual training, you name it. You're going to find yourself in a job you just don't want to do, or you're not comfortable doing because you don't know how to do it. Okay, great. It's a great opportunity. It's an opportunity to excel with an obstacle that's in your way. Right, figure out a way to get around it, and the best way to do that is to be the best person you can be to do that. If you don't know it, like I have never, in fact, right now I'm the dumbest guy in the room. I can tell you that right now. All this august body of brilliant people. But learn from it and then keep moving up. And that's what I think is through mentorship, purpose, fitness, you know, health and holistic fitness, teamwork, all these things, and have fun while you do it. I'm a big fan of that. If you don't enjoy the thing you're doing, stop doing it, go do something else. You're going to have bad days, I got that, but if you don't have fun with what you're doing, just go find somewhere else to be. Because you get boo-boo lip and you bring everybody down with your boo-boo lip. Don't be boo-boo lip every day. So that being said, have a great time out there, everybody. I really appreciate the four of y'all coming today. And I'm absolutely excited about the next time or one of the next episodes here as we come up in the future as we talk power projection, starting from a soldier, going to power projection, what that really looks like and how we power project out of here, because that's a huge part of our mission set and will be when the balloon goes up and some of the nuance and the difficulties of that and risk when it comes to like energy, independence, and resilience, when it comes to someone in your network, when it comes to attacking the physical security, whether it's cyber, whether it's physical, you name it, different forms of contact. It'd be really interesting to see and talk about what that looks like for us in the future. I'd be really interested to hear with some of the team, some other folks in DBTMS, what that really looks like. So, team, thanks a lot. Everybody out there, we'll see you on the high ground.
We are America's Health. We'll be right back.